Folks, are you concerned about American K through 12 education? Are you worried about what your children or grandchildren are learning or not learning in school? So if you've answered yes, my friends at Hillsdale College have a free resource for you. You've heard me talk about how Hillsdale College understands the importance of education to the future of our country. And now they're offering you 10 free print copies of their recent issue of Imprimis, entitled Education as a Battleground, written by Hillsdale College President Larry P. Arn. This special issue provides a factual account of the issues in the ongoing battle over education and why parents and teachers, not bureaucrats or activists, should guide what our children learn. With Hillsdale College, you can make a difference in your community by distributing these copies of Imprimis to your community. Don't miss this opportunity to arm yourself with the facts. Claim your 10 free copies of Education as a Battleground by visiting Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Act today and join the battle over education for our country's future. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com.
It doesn't matter if this was President Trump or if this was a Democrat. It should be equal justice in America. And stop going after people because you have political differences. I see people all the time that I have political differences. I respect their opinion. I may disagree with it, but why would you ever try to use the law for it? And it goes directly against everything that this Manhattan DA has professed. He brags about lowering felonies to misdemeanors and not prosecuting. We've watched crime in New York where people are afraid to walk the streets. We watched campaigns. And I will tell you, one of the reasons we won races in New York is based upon this DA of not protecting the citizens of New York. And now he's spending his time on this?
Well, yeah. His name is Bragg.
It is
Bragg. Just FYI. Welcome to the show. Your Tuesday curmudgeon. Just going to start doing like that. Dana Lash here with you. And always good. As usual to be with you. I want to get into some of this stuff because yesterday we heard that he was going... I don't know where the whole he was arrested is coming from. That's what Trump said, but the leak from Bragg's office just said that it was going, they were prosecuting it this week. What the grand jury was reviewing, I'm looking at King because he's nodding. The grand jury was convening yesterday and they were, now it may not be till next week. Why do you have that expression? Wait. I wish at some point we're going to get cameras on Kane because I need to know why you have that expression.
Nobody wants that. Because I think that there's a lot of this that I think is manufactured on both sides. I think that Trump has overblown what this was, you know, in the beginning. And I think that that sort of attention is what he craves. He knows how to get free publicity. You've seen him do it over 4 years when he was president. He would come up with some sort of, you know, thing and mm-hmm. then the press would be all about it, and then he would mm-hmm. then he would slip in something political or whatever at that
yeah.
point. So I think that there's some of this is manufactured. I think it's a dumb move for them to actually do any arresting,
right? But it's also dumb for him to manufacture it.
No, for sure,
because then people see now, because everybody was all riled up, they're like, oh my gosh, he's gonna get perp walked. What in the world? For what? Maybe. We're going to talk to Andy McCarthy here a little bit later on in the program, because McCarthy was the one who was making the argument that, well, if they wanted to exaggerate it to this level, if they wanted to, they could be going after a misdemeanor. But to me, that's just odd. We discussed a little bit of that yesterday. But see, yes, you know, he was telling everyone this is going to happen. Get prepared. And then everyone, you know, kind of. Some of us were saying, well, wait, who said there's going to be arrest? You're going to be arrested. Why? You were the only person who said that. But now, what are people supposed to be doing? For real, how are people supposed to react? Now, what are they just supposed to, I think there was like one person in Manhattan yesterday. Are they supposed to stay there till next week? I mean, that's kind of the million-dollar question. It's fair to ask this. It's not mean to ask this. Because we're trying to figure out the lay of the land here. So, apparently... Next week is now. I mean, to the latest reports, it's next week that something may happen. That's the New York Post. Okay. They said they're not expecting possible Trump arrest. Oh my gosh, everything is qualified. possible, perhaps, maybe, maybe somewhat chance, possibly. This is kind of the dramatic equivalent of Republicans pounce, like the very similar. I'm getting the same vibes. So now there was a law enforcement source that said via New York Post that the grand jury evidence, the hearing, the evidence in this case, they had another witness who was slated to testify tomorrow. And then if Trump was going to be arraigned, it would be next week. So that's, and nobody knows who's apparently going to be testifying tomorrow. I mean, that's the one thing that they haven't leaked, I guess. So they said that if an indictment came down over a misdemeanor, if it were to happen. Oh my, can I just, oh guys, this is so damn stupid. I want to throw my desk across the studio. I feel like we're playing Fisher-Price justice here. Today on the days of the United States. I feel like that's what we're doing. Listen to this. This is so much drama. The drama. A source close to former President Trump told the Post on Monday that if an indictment does come down, quote, Trump would surrender in Florida and fly to New York to be arraigned. Again, over a misdemeanor? Oh my gosh. I'm just saying, guys. I'm already exasperated, and we're only into day two of this week. I mean, I'm exasperated with the drama of this story, and this is just day two of it. Y'all, I cannot do a full week of drama. I cannot do, nor can you. We're broke. Everybody's broke. We cannot do a full week of this drama, this political intrigue. The will they or won't they? The persecution. I'm just, here's what Trump does need to be careful about. No one's arguing that the guy wasn't persecuted by the left and by the unaccountable bureaucrats in deep state. No one is arguing opposite that. But when you create drama and hyperbole where none should exist, you hurt your case overall. Does that make sense? You fatigue people. There is no reason to drum up any kind of drama where really none should exist. It really, you don't need that. This whole idea that, I mean, he just would show up even if they were to do it to this ridiculous level. The whole thing is so stupid. But, you know, then again, you know, this is the same press that decided to dox random people if they found them doing pro 45 Facebook pages. So who knows? So there, he's looking at falsifying business records. Here's the thing that is so stupid. I just want to highlight this. I'm looking at this, the original leak. This is over at New York Post. Conspiracy to violate campaign finance law. Again, because the so-called hush money that went through Michael Cohen and went to Stormy, what did he call her yesterday on his platform, Horseface?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I mean, I don't know. Really? I'm looking at it. I mean, I don't think she's particularly attractive, but anyway. So trying to say that which happened pre-campaign somehow constitutes a benefit to his campaign. It benefited a campaign that didn't exist at the time it happened. You can't retcon things like that. I just think that that's such a stretch. But we're going to talk to Andy McCarthy coming up. He's former U.S. attorney. He's going to know all of this. And we'll see. I mean, again, none of that's illegal. I struggle to see where there could even be a misdemeanor. So this is why I'm bringing the expert in to explain how that maybe perhaps is going to happen. All right. So that's one of the things that we're looking at today. And we'll, you know, we'll bring you any kind of update on it. But, you know, it really is. I think it's just absolutely just asinine. Some of the other stuff that we're following also. Foreign policy, because Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, they just a little bit ago had this event where with the press where they were signing some sort of stronger economic alliance. And they were side by side at this table and they were signing this agreement. So I'm just, you know, while all of this was happening, if you get my email prep list, if you're a subscriber over at Chapter and Verse, they had at the White House press briefing yesterday, the cast of Ted Lasso. And they had them all there. There were five cast members there. Some of the, you know, the stars of the show, including the guy whose name I can't remember, but he was really upset over his salad dressing because his one kind of skanky wife went out with Harry Styles, who wants to be Mick Jagger, but dress is too small and dresses too much like a chick. Who's the guy, the Ted Lasso guy, Kane?
What? Him? The actor that
plays Ted Lasso?
Jason Sudeikis?
Okay, Jason Sudeikis.
Yeah.
I mean, he's he seems to be kind of an insufferable leftist, but you know, at least I kind of do like him. Except apparently this season's supposed to be super dark because that's when he was going through everything with his wife. So fun things to look forward to. Anyway, that's not even my point. My point is this. Yesterday at the White House press briefing, you had the cast of Ted Lasso. And I love the guy who plays Roy Kent. He's the only person that I like up there. The guy who plays Roy Kent. They had them all up there. That's just the optic that I had in mind. While that was happening at the White House, you had Xi Jinping and Vlad Putin meeting. They had the cast of Ted Lasso to talk about mental health. Do you really need to do that? Do you really need to? And then there was a guy, what was it, from South Africa today, who was so mad that nobody had called on him. Listen to this. Audio soundbite one. This man could not be contained. He was so mad that Karine Jean-Pierre had not called on him. What did he say? 7 months? Listen to this.
Yeah, right. You're right. You're here for me. Refer me. No. Nope. That's not. We're not doing this. We're not doing this. We're not doing this. We're not doing this.
From across the room. You've been discriminating against me and discriminating against some people in the briefing room. And I'm saying that this is the U.S., this is not China, this is not Russia. This is not Russia.
Okay.
What you are doing, you are making a mockery of the First Amendment.
Decorum, please. Decorum, please.
It's been 7 months. You've not called on me. You've not my messages. I'm saying that that's not right.
Untimes, welcome, guys. Welcome. Welcome to the press briefing room. Okay.
This is not right.
Sir, let it go.
Are we ready? Are we going to behave?
Seriously.
While many folks...
Decorum, please. Simon.
I love it. Apparently some of the other press members got real mad. And he's apparently been... He's been warned before by the White House press corps. Correspondents association. So he was upset because he had been called on for quite some time. And they were, I think they had Jason Sudeikis get up there and say a couple of things about mental health. Can I just, don't you think that, you know, she could have been like, hey, mental health, something, something. Do you really need all that? What is the point of it? Because that, you realize that they were getting ready, they're getting ready to kick off. Well, didn't they have, is the first episode out? I don't know. They're getting ready to kick off Ted Lasso. This was kind of like a promo tour for them. And they tied it in to a White House press briefing. So I can understand why that guy was mad. Now, notice how no one in the media could say anything about it because he's a South African reporter. You heard probably, perhaps, his accent. The left can't say anything to him. You know, he checks too many boxes. Hell, he's not. He's from a different country. He's a minority. Oh, my gosh. And he just wants he just wants his questions answered. You can't say anything about him. He checks too many intersectional boxes. But I did think it was funny. The I can't remember her name. The blonde actress who plays the owner of the team in Ted Lasso. At one point, he said something, and she was behind Karine Jean-Pierre, and she just went, ooh, and kind of looked down at the stage. She seemed to be, like, the only one to understand kind of this guy's struggle. And everyone else just, it was just weird. That was happening while you had Xi Jinping and Vlad Putin meeting. I mean, day two. It's a weird optic, right? Am I being too sensitive to this? It's a weird optic.
Do you love bacon? I mean, really love bacon. If you're a bacon lover, today is your day. Whether for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, bacon is now free for a year at Good Ranchers. Subscribe to get 24 ounces of Applewood smoked bacon added to each box for a year. That's over $200 worth of bacon free. This is 100% American high-quality bacon sourced from local farms with no added hormones or antibiotics. To subscribe, find your perfect box in the Good Ranchers curated selection of pasture-raised meat and wild-caught seafood. Select the frequency that works best for you, and then enjoy less trips to the meat aisle and more flavor at dinner. As long as you stay subscribed, your price will never go up. That's the Good Ranchers price lock guarantee. Elevate your meals without elevating your expenses. Subscribe today at goodranchers.com for free bacon in every box for a year. Use code DANA to get an additional $20 off your first order. Get the best meat America has to offer. visit GoodRanchers.com. That's GoodRanchers.com, code Dana. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So, it's over, apparently. The inflation has killed the $1 pizza slices at New York City's Two Brothers Pizza. They're done. End of an era. It's apparently one of the most recognizable pizza joints in Manhattan, and they had to increase the price of their $1 pizza slice. And it's Two Bros Pizza, Two Brothers Pizza. They announced the death of the $1 slice this week. They said that they had to take up, they actually have to go up to $1.50. They said they did everything in their power to keep the cheese slices at $1. They didn't want to compromise quality. They said they got to do, I mean, it is a massive honking piece of pizza, slice of pizza. It is as big as a paper plate. I mean, in my house, that's like two slices or three. But it's at $1, so it's like, you know, it's like you're healthy. But man, they said that they raised it at $1.50. The last one that the loan holdout, they said, was in East Village. So man, everything is increasing because inflation that they say doesn't exist. A woman is suing Kaiser Permanente after she underwent gender-affirming surgery, and now she had a double mastectomy when she was 13 years old, and she's saying that it wasn't informed consent. Of course, which it wasn't. Hermie Dillon is her attorney. The 18-year-old biological woman, she detransitioned. She's suing the doctors who prescribed all these hormones for her when she was 12 years old, puberty blockers when she was 13, and performed a completely medically unnecessary double mastectomy on her this same year. And she said, she goes, I don't think I should have been allowed to change my sex before I could legally consent to have it. Which is, this is not informed consent, and she's correct on this. So you're going to see a lot more of these, I think. Biden actually blocked D.C.'s new crime law. Was he even aware that he did it? I'm just wondering. And, goodness, Wyoming passed a transgender athlete ban. We got a lot more on the way. Stick with us. Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
Russia and China. It seems like these two superpowers are teaming up now against the U.S. Why did President Biden let this happen?
Peter, these are two countries that have long chafed, as I said to Jeff, long chafed at U.S. leadership around the world, and the network of alliances and partnerships that we have. This is not something that these two countries just cooked up since President Biden got elected.
President, he has talked tough. He tried to pressure Putin and Xi to act right or risk their standing on the world stage. Does he see now that they don't care?
I think if you ask a lot of Russians, they certainly care. I mean, their economy is barely being propped up by some pretty radical measures by Mr. Putin. Their military has been roundly embarrassed inside Ukraine, and they continue to lose ground there.
Well, John Kirby is not doing a very good job at this at all. These were some of his weakest answers. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. The bottom of this first hour. Okay, so on break, I just happened to take a peek-see at the Twitters, and I can't even believe what I saw Senator John Cornyn just say. So he decided he was going to argue with my friend Sean Davis, who's over at The Federalist. And Sean Davis was taking exception to John Cornyn's tweet, where John Cornyn was going at Florida's governor for, this goes back to, Ukraine is a territorial dispute. And so he's quoting, Cornyn's quoting this Zelensky's answer, saying that he didn't want to appeal to the hearts of blah, blah, blah. He said, help us fight them here, help us defeat them here, and you won't have to fight them, you know, basically there. And Sean Davis says, well, if anybody buys this nonsense, you're an idiot. You can't risk our security and waste money on wars that have nothing to do with us. Cornyn says, quote, channeling Neville Chamberlain, I see. Okay, can we stop comparing everything to Czechoslovakia? Is that possible? Can we retire this absolutely stupid analogy? I've asked, how in the world is this in any way like Chamberlain? I feel like a lot of people are ignorant of history, and certainly the people running Senator John Cornyn's Twitter account are no exception. Can we stop? This is like saying everything is Hitler. Everything is Nazism. Everything is not Czechoslovakia. That is a very different backstory than what we're looking at today. And I can't even believe that this has to be explained to a sitting senator, or much less someone who is writing tweets for the Twitter account of a sitting U.S. senator. This is why Hillsdale says that education is absolutely critical for liberty. Here's a prime example of it. There's no excuse for it, and I don't give any kind of mercy or courtesy, especially when someone is in this sort of elected position and has the seniority that John Cornyn has. I absolutely do not appreciate any of this, and it aggravates me that we have to sit here and do this. So we're going to do a little history lesson here. This is not like annexing a slice of Czechoslovakia. It is not like that at all. And the difference, too, is that, well, that's one difference. But the other difference, too, without getting in too much into the weeds, is the makeup of everything and the makeup of Czechoslovakia. And Hitler was never, ever going to be, nor did he give any indication that he was ever going to be satisfied with just Czechoslovakia. But this is what one of the things that War Inc. is trying to impress upon people with this situation. That's why I just absolutely reject some of these shoddy arguments. They say, no, he's going to keep going until he's at the doorstep of NATO. He's already at the doorstep of NATO and has been since NATO included and confirmed the membership of Estonia and Latvia and other countries. I mean, they're already there. Do we not also, in addition to being ignorant of history, are we ignorant of geography too? It is not like this at all. But people, War Inc. wants you to think that it is. Because they need you to think that it is. They need you to think that if you're not standing up in this particular issue, if you call it a mere territorial dispute, or if you don't agree with them that he has the exact same machinations of Hitler, then you are somehow supporting Putin. That's ultimately what they're saying. I think calling someone Chamberlain is an absolute insult. Chamberlain was a weenie. And that's not what this is. I mean, not even in the slightest. I mean, there was a really good piece. I want to say it was at the Atlantic a while ago. And I don't think I saved it, but it got into some of the history of the creation of Czechoslovakia and the Czechoslovakian state as a result of the Paris peace conference back in the early 1900s, and how, you know, there was, it got into, the portion of Germany where it had like a little over 3 million Germans, Sudetenland, and so much, there was a lot of stuff that went into it. It's a very different makeup. There were very different borders, very different peoples, and it was a bunch of very different variables, for the lack of a better way to say it. And there were a lot of people at the time that were, after these boundaries had been set back in the early 1900s, that were outside of the borders of Germany at that time. But that's, I mean, I don't want to get into the weeds and entertain this as like a serious comment from a sitting senator. It is just, it's just devoid of history. And the other thing too, is that I always joke, because at least Chamberlain got a signature when Barack Obama was getting, when he was sitting down and meeting and are trying to negotiate, what is it, the Iran agreement. oh, we got their word. And I had joked at the time, well, at least Chamberlain got his signature. I just think it's so funny that now they're like holding, oh, don't want to be like Chamberlain. That's just, it's not, that is not the, that's not the right take. And just so tone deaf also. But no, it's not in, it's not in any way like that. I mean, did a staffer write this for him? It's just embarrassing. And this idea too, that, you know, these are the same people who prosecuted the Afghanistan conflict and the Iraq war. So far, they haven't been really good at making their case. Good heavens. So now you see. We have people here. My friend Sean made the good point. He says the U.S.-Mexico border is overrun. Uvalde police, which we're going to talk about, are currently blaming the Second Amendment for their own cowardice. American banks can't cover their own deposits. And this dummy's out here ugly crying about criticism of his Ukraine forever war. Mm-mm. I do agree. So I'm going to... It's just, it's frustrating to see. This is also kind of like using the argument, shouting fire in a crowded theater as a way to call for the suppression of speech. It's just illogical in the very same way. Everything's just like World War II. Now, I mentioned one thing. Let me pull this up. Because this was a piece. I have something that I'm working on about this. That Texas Tribune came out with this really ridiculous piece, and it didn't really go quite the way that they wanted it to go. They came out with this piece yesterday wherein they were arguing that, running defense for the police in Uvalde, remember the Uvalde massacre. The argument was that because the killer in Uvalde had an AR-15, the cops were afraid. They said that they were afraid to go in because he had an AR-15. And they didn't want anything. They didn't want to get killed. So ultimately, he admitted that they were cowards. And they admitted that they were cowards. Did you all realize that one of the officers was prevented from going in and saving his wife, who was one of the ones who was killed? Did you guys know that? Yeah. His wife was a teacher. And the one, he was actually the guy who was in the video who was looking at his phone and got some initial criticism because people were saying they stood out for 77 minutes and look at this guy looking at his phone. That's when he was texting his wife. His wife had said she had been shot and she was dying. Ruben Ruiz. He went to the classroom. It's on camera. And he had his rifle and he was going to storm the classroom and they all held him back and disarmed him. Somebody did that to me, there would have been a lot of dead people wearing uniform in the hallway. And his wife was killed. She succumbed to her mortal wounds after she texted with him. He was denied any attempt to save her and any attempt to be with her in her final moments. And it's all on camera. So now you have the Texas Tribune running defense for these guys. And it is absolutely stunning. They were apparently afraid, says Texas Tribune. Officers responding to Uvalde shooting said they were afraid to immediately engage the gunman because he was using an AR-15. They all had AR-15s, right? I just want to make sure everyone knows that. They all had the same rifle. They outgunned the killer. They outmanned the killer. And that's the extent of it. I mean, this idea that, oh, well, he had an AR-15. Do you know how many DGU, defensive gun uses, stories, the guy who disarmed somebody with an AR-15 with a pistol? I mean, there have been a number of those. These people are ballistically illiterate, for the lack of a better way to say it. This is a pro-gun control narrative, trying to run defense for the cowardice in Uvalde, while also condemning you for daring to want to protect yourself. This is their narrative. Well, police were so afraid of them. So if police are afraid of them, you shouldn't carry them. What? It's like saying, sir, we were afraid to go into the battlefield because the enemy had a gun. That's their argument here. He has a battle rifle. No one who knows anything about guns says that about an AR-15. Jiminy Christmas. It has this guy repeats the same stuff. They act like the bullets fire out, 10 times faster of an AR-15. This is the stuff they say. A battle rifle. It was absolute cowardice. Absolute cowardice. And they go into it. So that's the argument that they're pushing. They're running defense for the cowardice of the people in uniform who stood outside that classroom door in the hallway. They were all armed with AR-15s. And they outgunned and outmanned this killer. We had no choice but to wait. No, he had a choice. And you took it. But it's weird that Texas Tribune is bringing this up now. Well, it's timed right at the point where last week Joe Biden is making his push to ban quote-unquote assault weapons again. To limit the capacity of magazines. Only people who have literally never fired guns say this stuff. I mean, so you have a hallway full of equally armed, better trained, supposedly, officers against one teenager whose family should have had him committed, but they didn't do their duty. No, sidebar, I can say that. If all these innocent Second Amendment supporters can be blamed for what this killer teenager did, then his family sure as hell can be blamed for seeing these signs and not stepping in and doing their job as parents. Don't give me that. So you're telling me that a hallway full of armed, equally and better armed officers, because in addition to the rifles, they had their pistols, who were supposedly better trained, were afraid of a teenager, one armed teenager. I'm sorry, is this supposed to be an argument for the disarmament of the public? Because when I hear headlines like this, I feel like, hell, I need more guns. So that's what Texas Tribune messes up. We have a lot more on the way. Going to keep our eyes out on a lot of stuff popping off.
Thanks to your support, Patriot Mobile has emerged as one of the leaders in the parallel economy, and they have big news. Patriot Mobile now offers service with all three major networks. This means if you're with the big three and like the service but hate their values, you can access them with Patriot Mobile. They also offer a performance guarantee. So if you're not happy with your coverage, you can switch between the three major carriers for free. Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offers nationwide coverage on the best 4G and 5G networks, so you get the same great service while supporting a company that fights to preserve our God-given rights and freedoms. Resolve now to stop supporting companies that don't align with your values. The Patriot Mobile 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Just visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today with the offer code Dana. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
Of all your favorite talk hosts, one of these is not like the others. The Dana Show.
You know, the Persian culture is amazing. As a student of the Persian culture, not a practitioner, but a student.
What? I'm confused. Not as much as him, but what does that mean? Yeah, sorry, your president. He's going back to Delaware again this weekend.
What?
Yeah, yeah. So going back to Delaware this weekend, folks.
Surprise.
He didn't have anything on his schedule last weekend either. And he's going back to Delaware again this weekend. Just, because they don't have any visitor logs there. So it's totally fine. Ooh, my word. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Yeah, he is... I don't know. What did Kamala Harris said that she was going to start campaigning for him? Yeah. That seems weird that she just says that and they don't say that she's campaigning for him. Doesn't that kind of stick out to you a little bit? Like she's trying hard to keep her spot.
Yeah.
Democrats do not want her to be president. She hasn't even been popular amongst Democrats. They got a problem with their women. Nobody liked Hillary Clinton. Nobody likes Kamala Harris. Nobody, they all have a huge issue with them. So coming up, I keep seeing people use this John Edwards example with Trump and the whole Stormy Daniels thing. So I wanted to kind of just give a quick recap, because the John Edwards thing was so much exponentially worse. I don't even care what you think about federal, you know, finance campaign laws. I don't care. It is so bad. But one of my favorite things is it involved this, you know, she's since passed, this elderly socialite named Bunny Mellon. Yes, of like the Carnegie Mellon people. Really? Bunny Mellon. So we're gonna go over that, because today's apparently the day of bad analogies in these days of our United States. We'll go over our favorite episodes. Stay with us. Coming back after this. Second hour on the way.
I don't yet have all the details about the collapse of the two banks. We do know that the recent developments are very different than those of the global financial crisis. Back then, many financial institutions came under stress due to their holdings of subprime assets. We do not see that situation in the banking system today. Our financial system is also significantly stronger than it was 15 years ago.
What?
Sorry, but excuse me? I don't think anybody believes that. No one believes it. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Top of our second hour, ladies and gentlemen. And you can listen from sea to shining sea in a market near you. You can also stream the show online, watch YouTube, Facebook, lots of discussion on YouTube, and then of course channel 349 DirecTV. No, there's been some bad stuff. It's not the best that it's ever been. Not at all. There's been a lot of debate. We're going to talk to Carol Roth about this coming up later on in the program as to how the SVB was allowed to happen. And there have been accusations of wokery and denials of those accusations. But there were some very clear warning signs. And you had just, what is it, yesterday, Biden vetoed a piece of legislation that was going to remove ESG, which is not unlike China's behavioral credit system. But they were going to remove that from banking, from finance, the world of finance. And he didn't want to do it. He wants it in there. That all contributes to this. I mean, in every sector of American life, whether it is now K through 12, schools, colleges, really ultimately where it began, whether it is in your med school, law school, your workplace, everywhere, your church, everywhere, this pernicious plague of wokery has spread and infected every aspect of American life. Every sector of industry is affected. It has entirely replaced, which is a terrifying thing when you consider, like, medical, for one thing, merit. It has supplanted merit. You have to check boxes. Things that you can't control are considered intersectional somehow, you know, get out of jail free cards or bonuses or however you want to describe it. It's supposed to make someone's status, their ethnicity, how they have sex with other people, all this other stuff is somehow supposed to be a sufficient replacement for merit, for competency, for just the ability to do a job well, which is a terrifying thing. But this is the reality in which we live, and no sector, including the financial sector, has been untouched. Apparently, Silicon Valley Bank was accused of politicking too much, pushing wokery too much. This is one of the things that New York Post piece on this is pretty insightful. their executives were pushing the DEI and the woke programs, etc. They had this initiative that they had launched, and it included a new blog that emphasized mental health awareness for the alphabet people. And I mean, just listen to this. This is one of the statements that they had from this website. See how many boxes you can check, okay? It says, as a queer person of color and a first-generation immigrant from a working-class background, there were not many role models for me to see growing up. Queer person of color and an immigrant, working class. Oh, four boxes. Can you beat four boxes? It takes four bowls of total to enter to equate to one bowl of colon blow. Colon blow and you in the morning. I have no idea how I remember that. Classic. But that's what it is. It takes one of you. I mean, it's insane. So they list all of these other things that have nothing to do with merit. Does how you have sex with someone mean that you do your job better? I mean, if your job maybe is a whore, then maybe so. I don't know. Being a person of color, does that make you do your job better? Being someone who immigrated from another country, does that make it? None of these things matter. Working class background, so everyone comes from a working class background. But they also had what they called a safe space catch-up over at SVB, where employees bothered everyone with their coming out stories. No one cares. No one cares. Here's like an actual sentence. Quote, I feel privileged to co-chair the LGBTQ plus ERG and help spread awareness of lived queer experiences, partner with charitable organizations, and create a sense of community for our LGBTQ plus employees and allies. What is a lived queer experience? I'm so tired of these stupid buzzwords. As opposed to, because other people's experiences aren't lived, isn't every experience lived? Shut up. This is so dumb. They had not, I mean, they only said that, they, I mean, it seemed like they were focusing on everything else. And of course, not having to be able to cover, not having to meet the requirements of covering your depositors. That's also a big thing. Lobbying DC to reduce regulation on that, and through that, your responsibility. That's a big thing. But it's, you can see how now why people are saying, seems y'all weren't focusing on merit. Why focus on doing your job when you can focus on your skin color? I mean, isn't that the opposite of everything that we were taught in the 80s and 90s? We're going to talk to Carol Roth about this coming up here. Because it is, it's absolutely in every single aspect of our life, including hockey. Oh, man. The National Hockey League, NHL. They've had some players who are declining to wear pride gear. And then they had this twerp, a guy named Andrew Berkshire, legacy blue check, new phrase. He said, quote, someone in the NHL needs to have a stern meeting with players and inform them that wearing pride gear doesn't make you gay. All it does is make a statement that people in the LGBTQ plus, or no, LGBT plus, where's the Q? Why does he not get to put the Q in? Right. Community are welcome in the sport. Don't say there's no hate on your heart if you can't wear a t-shirt. That's what they're mad. So if you don't want to wear the shirt, if you apparently hate isn't forcing people into making statements and then threatening them with penalties if they don't do it. That's not hate. Hate is them wanting to wear whatever they want to wear. Just play hockey. No one, by the way, that's such a straw man argument. No one ever said that wearing that was going to make the players gay either. Nobody said that. Maybe people just want to be left alone. I mean, the weird thing is that there were gay Twitter users who were out there going, I don't even want to wear this stupid shirt. Shut up. Right. Like, everything has been so politicized and hateified. I mean, Why the hate is the reaction when people fail in their endeavor to force other people to acquiesce to their demands, and then they threaten them. Like, why does this person think that, or anyone with NHL think that you better wear a shirt celebrating how we choose to have sex with each other? And if you don't, then you must be hateful. Or maybe you could just not do that. Stop it. It's not like, I don't know, man. How in the world did that become a thing where you have to sit here and acknowledge and affirm what people do behind closed doors? I hate putting it in such crude terms, but that's what we're talking about. That's what it is. It's like saying, I like to slice my sandwiches into triangles, not rectangles. So where's my shirt? I am the triangle slice sandwich person. Where's my shirt? Oh, my gosh. Just play hockey. Stop it. Gavin Newsom says that California is going to spend $30,000 on 1,200 tiny homes to combat homelessness. They're making a little tiny home village. Basically like she sheds. A bunch of she sheds in a row. For 1,200. I mean, do you realize that's... How many homeless people are in California? Hundreds of thousands? Something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like there's only 1,200 homeless people in California. It's crazy. Nope. Now, they apparently, he wants the National Guard to help deploy 1,200 small homes across four counties to help immediately get more folks off the streets and into housing. They've already spent $22 billion combating homelessness and housing projects. And a third of all the homeless people in the United States live in California. That is crazy. 30%. That is crazy. So maybe, guys, you're not doing things right there. Just a thought. Good heavens. So he had this, they announced their plan just the other day of purchasing these tiny homes. They're going to put them in all the major, so it'll be Sacramento, Los Angeles, San Francisco, I think Oakland. And they played footage of a homeless encampment and all this stuff. But again, if you have a third of the homeless
in the
entire country that live in California, what is 1,200 homes going to do? And also, to that point, why not maybe take inventory of your policies and see what you're doing to contribute to that in terms of big government, taxation, et cetera, et cetera? Because it seems like there are probably more affordable solutions that have a way bigger payoff than spending $20 billion here, $20 billion there over and over again while not doing anything to remedy the cause of the situation. No, you can't talk to these people with facts. You can't. So coming up, the media want to con you into abandoning your positions by saying that you're a grievance party now. We're going to talk about all of this. We have Andy McCarthy, who's coming up, too, on the rumored potential, maybe, I don't know, arrest and this indictment coming from Alvin Bragg. We're going to discuss this issue with him and ask him some questions only he can answer.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I can't believe this is a headline, but Kane's immediately interested. It's a headline, though, and I got to share it. So apparently, when Hillary and Chelsea Clinton were at the theater, Schubert Theater, this is according to Page Six, someone just straight up pooped right in the aisle. Right? I mean, I'm not kidding you. I'm not trying to be 10 years old, but... It was at a performance of Some Like It Hot, which I'm not making up. I swear to you. They said that it was a regrettable one-off incident, but apparently the theater staff told Page Six that, quote, last week when Hillary and Chelsea Clinton were in the audience, the lights came up for intermission and there were two human turds in the aisle just near them. They said the house crew dealt with it very appropriately and quickly and that Hillary and Chelsea remained in the theater for the second act. Oh, man. I don't have anything to add to that. That everything about that is just like the perfect storm of a story. So Idaho has passed a bill to allow firing squads to execute death row inmates. I approve. That is, they passed a bill allowing firing squads when lethal injection drugs are unavailable. So, okay. What? Yeah. So, and I mean, anyway, they said, I mean, considering the, didn't it seem like that would be pretty painless compared to the other way that they do it? I don't know. I'm just saying, but good on Idaho. Good on you. I'm going to eat more of your potatoes. Let's see. Speaking of Idaho, Idaho Hospital, they are stopping labor and delivery because they're citing political climate and doctor shortages. Really? It is Bonner General Health, located in Sandpoint, a news release. It's a 25-bed hospital. They have to go to birthing centers in elsewhere, Spokane or Coeur d'Alene, and they drive to other hospitals or birthing centers. They delivered 265 babies in last year, and they admitted fewer than 10 pediatric patients. But it's all because of Roe v. Wade. And they're saying it's political climate. We can't do that. A CNN crew was robbed while covering street crime in San Francisco. They were the back glass of their little crossover was broken out. And they said that it had it's not their windshield. Do these people know parts of a car here over at Mediate? They said got robbed again. They were at City Hall in broad daylight, City Hall in San Francisco to do an interview. They had security watching their rental car and crew car. They said thieves did this in under 4 seconds. Security stopped them from stealing the other bags. But they go, seriously, this is ridiculous. Isn't that what you guys supported, though? I mean, come on. I mean, you guys cheered it on. Mostly peaceful protests and all that. Did we all forget it? I'm just wondering, because I didn't forget it. Those people didn't forget it. Just saying. And St. Francis Brooklyn, a Division I, they eliminated their entire athletics program after their 2023 spring semester. It's gone. Andy McCarthy joins us next to talk about this Trump indictment. Stick with us.
Want a behind-the-scenes look at The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana's Chapter and Verse newsletter for a deeper dive in all things Dana at danalash.com.
So welcome back to the radio program. Your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash, here with you. You can listen coast to coast in any state, really, in a market near you. You can also stream it online, and you can watch the simulcast on YouTube via the First, Facebook, and Channel 349 DirecTV. We've been discussing quite a bit about the leaked indictment from Alvin Bragg's office, and we were I was asking, who's saying that Trump is going to be arrested? It seems like it's a little bit of hyperbole, because isn't it, you know, at best like maybe a misdemeanor? Why would someone go to such theatrical length for a misdemeanor? There's a million questions, and so to have our questions answered, one of the smartest people, I think the smartest guy out there to talk to about this, is our friend Andy McCarthy. He's a best-selling author. You know his book, Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. He's also a contributing editor at National Review, and you see him on Fox. He's a Fox News contributor, former chief U.S. assistant U.S. attorney as well. Andy McCarthy, always a pleasure. Thank you for your time. You had a really great piece about this where you kind of broke down exactly Alvin Bragg's strategy. He is, you know, ultimately, you know, he's trying to charge Trump with a misdemeanor. And you said that this can be inflated into a felony. Explain this for people, because, you know, there's the discussion that, well, I mean, it's, you know, a question of morals if you're going to have a mistress, and it's not technically illegal to pay your mistress off. But there's a caveat here that you wrote about that has to do with the first year of Trump's presidency. Enlighten us on this.
Well, thanks so much, Dana. You know, the funny thing about this thing is the salacious details that I think people are most interested in, obviously, are almost irrelevant in the sense that, like, Stormy Daniels says she had, fling with Trump. Trump says it didn't happen. Whether it did or it didn't is unimportant to the case. Because what the case is about is the booking, not the non-disclosure agreement itself. There was a non-disclosure agreement that was entered into in October of 2016. The case is about how that was booked on the Trump Organization records. So what people need to understand, as you just mentioned, the morals aspect of it, really irrelevant to the legal reality. Non-disclosure agreement itself, there's nothing illegal about non-disclosure agreements. They are a staple of the justice system. They're a common way that civil litigation ends. So what we're talking about is Michael Cohen, on Trump's behalf, pays $130,000 to Stormy Daniels on the eve of the 2016 election to buy her silence, which is what happens in a non-disclosure agreement. And then they have to decide how Trump is going to pay him back. So rather than paying him back in a lump sum, they did some bookkeeping razzmatazz and paid him through 2017 in monthly installments because it was combined with other things that they owed him money for. And because, as they put it, they grossed it up so that he wouldn't take a tax hit. Because let's remember, the reimbursement of a debt is not taxable, right? Mm-hmm. If I lend you money and you pay me back, that's not a taxable event. But if you do legal services for me, it is a taxable event. It's taxable income. So they grossed up the $130,000. Basically, they doubled it so that he wouldn't take a tax bite. And then they combined it with other things and paid him in $35,000 installments through 2017. The last payment was December 5th of 2017. So what the charge is, we think, is falsification of business records. In New York, that is a misdemeanor. And what simply happened here, I think the most succinct way to describe it, is there was the reimbursement for a debt that accrued in 2016. And instead, in their records, they booked it as the payment of legal fees in 2017. So that's the falsification part. In New York, no one would get prosecuted for this. In fact, the district attorney we have in New York is a guy who's best known for taking actual felony conduct and degrading it to misdemeanors if he prosecutes it at all.
Right.
Here he's taking nonsense that's pretty stale. I mean, we're talking about 17-year-old, liaison. And a 7-year-old non-disclosure agreement and a 6-year-old stream of payments. Presumably what happened is that stream of payments generates other financial records, because remember, you would not settle up for the tax obligations of 2017 until 2018, right? So presumably that would put you into 2018. I'm being nerdy about the dates because the statute of limitations is a big issue in this case.
And so
if it's a misdemeanor, if it's a misdemeanor in New York, the statute of limitations is only 2 years. So if it started to run in 2018, it would have lapsed in 2020. A felony is 5 years. So in order to turn this trifling, stale transaction that is a misdemeanor in New York law into a felony, Bragg would have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Trump intended, by falsifying the records, to conceal another crime he had committed, which is why you're hearing all this stuff about campaign finance law and, you know, other abstruse potential felonies. I think it's the looniest thing you can imagine, because campaign finance laws, to the extent they're relevant to a presidential election, are federal. They're not state.
Right.
When New York law says to conceal another crime, since that's the New York Penal Code, we have to assume they're talking about another New York crime. You know, I don't think a federal charge does it. I wouldn't think, for example, like a crime against Sharia would do it. I don't think a crime against the law of France would do it. When they say another crime, they're talking about New York crimes. So a federal crime is not going to do it for them. And I don't even think, if it did, that this is a campaign finance violation. That's the reason my old office, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District, which had this investigation initially, they walked away from it because they didn't see a crime here. So the idea that the Manhattan District Attorney is going to vindicate federal campaign finance laws that the feds themselves didn't think were violated here seems kind of nuts to me. And the other thing is, even if you thought there was another crime here, it's not enough to show that there's some other crime that trained lawyers are having trouble identifying that's lurking around this. You would also have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Trump knew of that crime and intended to cover it up by the bookkeeping. I'm not sure they're going to be able to prove that he even knew how his subordinates were keeping the books. But the best interpretation of the facts, I think, as we understand them, is he was probably trying to conceal the non-disclosure arrangement with a porn star from his wife or from voters in the 2016 election. I think probably the last thing on earth that he had in his mind was to conceal another felony that none of us can figure out, you know, what the hell felony it is.
That is the best way to put it. I'm talking with our friend Andy McCarthy. You can find him on Twitter, Andrew CMC Carthy, Andrew C. McCarthy. Because you answered, you know, two of my questions right there. I mean, how this calls into play campaign finance law, because it's going into 2017 and 2018. And then the tactic of trying to inflate this into a felony, that seems like a really, really tall order. Do you think that Bragg is kind of bluffing here? Because it all seems like such cloak and dagger. We heard that the grand jury was looking at this week. Trump was saying that he was going to be arrested today. I don't know where he got that, but that's what he was saying. Now, apparently, it looks like it, you know, what if he's arraigned, it might be next week. Is that typical for a misdemeanor? Do you honestly think that, hey, that's typical for a misdemeanor, that all that theater? And then secondly, that seems like such a tall order, as you wrote, to inflate this into a felony. He's got to be bluffing. Bragg has to be bluffing.
Well, on the misdemeanor versus felony thing, you don't need the grand jury to indict a misdemeanor.
Yeah.
Under the Constitution, you get grand jury protection to the extent it is protection,
right,
to have a body that would indict a ham sandwich, as they say. But that is the grand inquest of the people is your protection from overzealous prosecutors, in theory. Mm. But you only get that for felonies. So if it was a misdemeanor that he was looking for, he could do that on his own. He wouldn't need the grand jury for that. Now, so you have to presume if he's doing this, it's a felony. And it looks like he's doing all the things a prosecutor would do to bring the case. So, for example, in New York law, Dana, when I was a federal prosecutor, the grand jury rules are very loosey-goosey. I could put an FBI agent on who's like the case agent in the case and give the grand jury by hearsay what the testimony of all the other witnesses would have been. Whereas in New York law, they actually require you to bring the witnesses in. You can't do it by hearsay. So that's why people may have been wondering, why on earth do they need Michael Cohen to come in and testify again when he's testified like 8 zillion times about this in front of Congress and in federal court, et cetera? They need to put the actual witnesses in the case in the grand jury. So they did that for 2 days last week with Cohen. The other thing that New York law does is the target of a grand jury investigation gets invited, not subpoenaed, because it's not compulsory, invited to come in at the very end and try to talk the grand jury out of charging him. You know, he can answer questions, and if he's got a reasonable explanation of what he did, then the grand jury may not indict. Almost no target ever takes the prosecutor up on this, because they figure by the time you're at the end of your grand jury investigation, they've decided to indict anyway. So why help them by giving them testimony, right?
Right.
But in terms of the procedure, they did that with Trump last week. They invited him to come in and his lawyers declined. So you wouldn't think they would be doing that unless they were pretty serious about the case.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I think what happened with the I'm going to be arrested on Tuesday. First of all, I don't think Trump's going to be arrested at all in the traditional sense. What's going to happen is Bragg has a grand jury that apparently meets on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. So one of those days, maybe Wednesday this week, maybe Thursday this week, they'll file an indictment. It could happen next week for all we know. We're not in control of that, and we may not know it if they file it under seal even when it happens. But what will happen is the grand jury will indict on one of the days that it sits, and then they will work out between the DA's office, the NYPD, and the Secret Service when Trump will come from Mar-a-Lago to surrender. The DA's office in Lower Manhattan is in a criminal courthouse. So what would happen is they'll bring Trump in. the NYPD would process him. They won't put handcuffs on him. This is a nonviolent case, and he's in Secret Service protection.
That's what I would have wondered.
Yeah. So I think what will happen is people should know that for all the brickbats that are going back and forth between the Trump camp and the Bragg camp, Secret Service and the NYPD are very good police organizations, and they cooperate with each other all the time. There's a lot of Secret Service protectees who spend a lot of time in New York. So this is not, this situation is unprecedented, but it's not unusual for them to cooperate. And they'll make sure the two things that have to happen, which is Trump will remain secure. He'll be in Secret Service protection as always. And the New York City police will make sure he gets processed like everybody else who comes in the system, and that he gets produced in court for what I think will be a quick court proceeding. This is a nonviolent case, so he'll get released on his own recognizance. Mm. He'll be being brought in on a formal indictment, so they'll probably have an arraignment where he'll enter a plea formally. It'll be a plea of not guilty. And then the case will be assigned to a judge, and they'll schedule pretrial motions, and we'll be off to the races.
Wow, this is going to be something to watch. It's there's no lead up. It's just going to happen all at once. And boy, oh boy, the storm around that. Andy McCarthy, his book "Ball of Collusion: The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency." Fabulous read. I actually just loaned it to my stepdad. It's a great book. Andy always. I got him a copy too, but he wanted to read it when he was here, and he started in on it, so I had to let him take it with him. But it's so good to
you
talk.
You made my day. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Hoo boy. All right. So in Cocoa, Florida, a woman was arrested at a McDonald's, accused of brandishing a gun in the drive-thru and pointing it at an employee due to an argument over a non-existent menu item. So what was the item, out of curiosity? So apparently the fuss was over a cheeseburger bundle, kind of, I don't know, like what, I don't even know what that is. And the employees were saying that wasn't an actual menu item. So she pulled out an M&P shield, and I love how they sit here and they talk about this gun. I cannot even deal. Whoever wrote this article about this gun has no idea about guns. God help us all. But the affidavit said this was last week. Her name is Quavi Young, 26 years old. She says that she wanted a cheeseburger bundle, and the employees were telling her that doesn't exist. And things were a little busy, employees told police, in the drive-thru lane. So they were trying to get her to go, order something or go. It doesn't exist. She then began brandishing the gun and verbally threatening the people inside the McDonald's. When police were called and arrived, they learned that she did not even have a valid driver's license. So she faces, because you can't brandish, that's an actionable offense. And so she was driving with a suspended license. She got a brandishing charge, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, because she was saying she was going to kill them and she had the means to do so. So it was a felony charge, and she was she bonded out on about $7,500. That over a non-existent menu item. An 18-year-old who crashed a car into a Georgia Walmart gave the judge a middle finger at the hearing. We'll talk about that tomorrow. We're a little out of time today. But third hour on the way. Carol Roth is going to join us later on in that third hour to talk about the financial storm, lack of a better way to put it. Stay with us.
You got to pay us.
Yeah, definitely. Because when you start talking about paying people to get vaccinated, when you start talking about incentivizing things to get people vaccinated, there's something else going on with that.
But I'm glad millions of people like me and most everybody here didn't get an incentive. You know what their incentive was? Protecting their health and protecting the city. But I won't keep you anymore.
It's okay, because my incentive, y'all campaign is about fear. It's about inciting fear in people. You all attack people with fear. That's what this pandemic is. It's a fear. It's fear, this pandemic.
I kind of want that dude to run for office, to be real. Welcome back to the program. Top of our third hour. Man, it did not go over so well. This was when you had, back in 21? All this video is coming out. It was supposed to be this documentary about Tony Fauci and the Fauci-ouchie. But it didn't work out so well for them, did it? Whew. Welcome back to the program. Your lovable curmudgeon here, Dana Lash, with you. And coming up, Carol Roth is going to be joining us on all of the banking drama and the wokery and ESG and everything else. But no, this was, he was in D.C., and the way they were presenting this was that he was battling vaccine hesitancy, is what Kane's rolling his eyes so hard. He almost lost those eyeballs, man. He almost rolled them right out your head. But that's what it was supposed to look at. It was on PBS, and they were going door to door encouraging residents to receive their quote unquote vaccine. Who was it that said that they had just gotten coronavirus again? Dick Durbin?
Yes.
He said that he got it again, and he's like, oh, thankfully I've got all my vaccines. How stupid is this? Like, oh, can you imagine how much worse this virus that I contracted would have been if I hadn't gotten the vaccines for the virus? How stupid does that sound? Then it's not a vaccine. It didn't prevent transmission. Stop saying that it did. Good grief. So this, it didn't go well for him. And then he said, listen to this, audio soundbite 13. This is from that Fauci documentary that is not going over so well. Apparently they received a lot of hesitancy when they were walking around in D.C. And I just got to ask you, D.C. votes normally what, Kane?
Oh, that's blue.
It's blue. But listen to what he says here. Listen.
What are we going to do about those other states?
Oh, my God. They're going to keep the outbreak smoldering in the country. It's so crazy. I mean, they're not doing it because they say they don't want to do it. They're Republicans. They don't like to be told what to do.
Right.
And we got to break that, you know, unpack that.
How you guys doing with vaccine?
So he's in D.C., going door to door in D.C., and he's getting pushback from a generationally hardcore blue area. And he's like, well, it's the Republican states that are going. You know what? He's saying this because he wants to ingratiate himself with the city. He is so eager to ingratiate himself with the left. If they give him a little attention, he laps it up, and he wants more of it. He wants to show that he's obedient to their ideology. And in a way that indicates he says he's not a political animal. It's garbage. It's irrelevant. He indicates that he is because he's so willing to adopt and do whatever it is necessary to, as I said, ingratiate himself to them. But he's in a super blue city walking around and talking to probably Democrat voters who are pushing back on him. And then he goes, oh, it's the Republicans. They're going to keep the outbreak smoldering because they won't get vaccinated. And then we learn later the vaccine doesn't do a damn thing. If anything, it helps. If anything, it made people think that they were not going to transmit it or contract it. And then they went out infecting everybody else. How about that? It's a pandemic of the vaccinated. It was all BS. I see this and it makes me so angry. This is why you don't give over a portion of control or any of it to unelected bureaucrats and stand back and allow them to make major decisions about healthcare in the country. Infuriates me. I love that people were pushing back. I love it. Love it. Love it. Oh, I got to tell you a story. Oh my gosh. Can I just tell you guys something? I normally don't get aggravated at people, but I did yesterday. Okay. So hold up. So I was on my way. Because James O'Keefe was in town, and his O'Keefe Media Group were doing it was basically like a fundraiser for O'Keefe Media Group. And it was very well attended, very well supported. And on our way to where the event was pulling my car around the parking lot, and some chick with her super blonde hair, and I'm not hating, an older lady, and has her little vape pen, and she clearly did not know how to drive her car.
Oh, no.
She took such a wide turn, she almost hit me. And I'm basically stopped at that point because I can see this broad coming from a mile away, and I'm like, this broad cannot drive her car. She's just speeding around that, and then she sort of is like, I don't know what she said, and I like to drive, and I am mean. But I also know traffic rules, and I can drive well. And you know, I just, you know, didn't think anything of it, but I thought it was kind of ridiculous, you know, because she was speeding through that parking lot, taking that tight current turn at like, you know, 35 miles per hour easily. I'm like, if I hadn't been stopped, she'd have probably hit me. So anyway, but she had the vape pen. I parked and I get out, and she had parked, and I thought, please do not let us go into the same event because I may have to kick her ass at this thing. So, but she had her little vape thing, right? I watched this broad get out of her car, her little vape and huffing on her little vape thing. And then you know what she does? She puts it away in her bag. And I thought that was the end of it. Then from her bag, she retrieves a face mask and puts it on her face. What? The face mask. After she, I hands to Sky, and then at that point, Katie barred the door. I could not shut up. Puts the face mask on her face. She was in the car by herself vaping. She gets out of the car by herself, puts a face mask on her face going into the restaurant. First off, it's March of 2023. Okay? They don't work. That's number one. Number two, I think her being fat and vaping is more dangerous than not wearing the face mask.
True.
I may have said that loudly. Walking by. Because someone has to. You know, someone had to do the public a service. Kane, you should be proud of me because that's all I said.
Yeah, you did. You ended it right there?
Yes.
Wow. You're getting better.
Yeah.
You're getting better at it.
No, I'm trying. New year, maybe new me. But for real, dude, puts the face mask on. She's like, make sure face cover. Goes in. And I'm not going to repeat what I said when I walked past. Because I normally don't get into anybody's business. But she was such a reckless driver. And she was vaping and then she puts it on. So as we walk past, I just said, I would just think that being a reckless vaping fat ass is probably more dangerous than not wearing. And then I walked. It's not my, not guys. It is, I know, I repented later and I was like, I'm sorry. Amen. But that was all I needed to see, man. All I needed to see. I swear to you, some people, it's a virtue signal. Look at me. I love everyone else. Not enough to drive safely in a parking lot, but I love everyone else. Value your lives. Wear my face mask. I get it. If you have some disease and you're worried about maybe something that a mask can stop, I don't know. I'm not going to judge you and or say anything if you're just a normal person doing your stuff. But when you're that broad and you, I just can't, man, no jury would convict me. Would you? You would probably say something too.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, that was yesterday. I had to share that story because the thing with the masks, I got so aggravated. This Fauci stooge was the guy who was out there telling, well, you got to wear your mask. Got to wear your mask. You're going to perpetuate this. You're going to perpetuate it. And it's going to smolder if you don't wear your masks. And then all these studies come out. They don't do anything. The masks don't do a thing. Not a thing. So I don't know. I had to share that story. I don't mind. Like I said, I don't care if people are going to wear their masks. Do what you're going to do. But don't be like vaping and huffing and puffing on that vape pen. You know, like you're underwater and that's the last bit of oxygen in that tiny canister. Don't be doing that, right? And then put on your face mask. I'm healthy. I just can't. I just can't stand it. Anyway, I had to share that because that made me mad. And this reminded me of that. And I can't believe I didn't share it beforehand. So can we talk about the John Edwards thing real quick? I'm so tired of seeing this comparison. The Trump thing is like the John Edwards thing. It's nowhere near the John Edwards thing. John Edwards didn't just pay hush money, like 130 or whatever, how many thousand to some woman to shut up about romantical times, right? This dude was just grifting this elderly socialite dry for cash. John Edwards, when he was running for office, and remember, it was the National Enquirer that broke that. And all the Democrats were like, National Enquirer, such a trashy magazine, National Enquirer. But they were right. They got the picture of him meeting that Riel Hunter in the lobby. His wife had cancer. John Edwards' wife is dying of cancer. And he's out there with his mistress, father, and a love child. So apparently, Bunny Mellon, she was the one who designed the White House Rose Garden for her friends, President Kennedy and his wife, Jackie. She is worth just under $1 billion. And she had 200 employees at her four homes, Virginia, Paris, Manhattan, actually more than that. Virginia, Paris, Manhattan, Antigua, Cape Cod, Nantucket. And she bankrolled John Edwards. She paid for his haircut. She paid for his suit. She paid for everything. Hillary Clinton referred to her as a quote unquote old rag. And she ended up getting dragged into this when it turned out that the money that John Edwards was using to pay off Rael Hunter and, you know, essentially, you know, handle all of this other stuff, it was coming from her. And so she got drug into this into the scandal. I can't remember, like, when she gave Edwards almost $1 million to help hide his affair with that campaign videographer. And then they lied about it and said that it was furniture purchases. And they called the money bunny money. John Edwards got some bunny money. He paid off Rael Hunter and hit everything with bunny money. So that's why he got 6 felony counts. There were 6 felony counts in this because he accepted all of this millions in unreported campaign donations and was using it to actually benefit his campaign. He was running at the time, and he was using it to pay off Rael Hunter and hide his love baby. So when Bunny Mellon finally kicked the bucket, her funeral, they had banned John Edwards from her funeral. Now, here's the other reason why. John Edwards was going to run for president. He was the guy that they had before Barack Obama. John Edwards was the guy they were grooming. He was what, the Southern attorney? He was their everything. He was he seemed like a more genteel Gavin Newsom, I guess, at the time. And much more accessible coming from, what was it? North Carolina is where he came from? Can't remember now. But then Gavin Newsom, who's California and comes from this family, you know, dynasty and all this stuff. So totally not at all even remotely like this Trump situation.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So I know we're going to be talking about this coming up with our very good friend Carol, but it is just kind of weird to me that just a few days ago, the U.S. Fed is launching FedNow Instant Payment Service. Amid fears that it could end CBDC interest, the United States Federal Reserve is launching its instant payment service, FedNow. It's going to officially, it was announced just a couple of days ago, it's going to kick off in July. And there are concerns that it could prematurely end the country's interest in a digital dollar. It's been in the works since 2019. They're touting it to be the fastest way to make payments by financial institutions in the U.S. around the clock every day of the year. I just think it's a little weird that it's all happening right now. Just, you know, a little odd. Paris stinks as uncollected trash mounts to 10,000 tons due to the strikes, because everybody, they're all having strikes. Now, the new estimate, it's up like almost 8,000 tons earlier in the week, comes after their interior minister said strikers are being forced back under emergency powers to safeguard essential services. I mean, nothing is happening over there right now. It's pretty, after school laser tag game is raising concerns in Grand Rapids. This is also silly. In Kent County, Michigan, parents who are ridiculous apparently are upset over after school laser tag games. They don't like the idea of kids running around halls with toy guns and all this other stuff. I just think people who can't tell the difference between play and actual danger can't be trusted to deal with either. Carol Roth next.
Your one-stop shop for the information you need to fight back. If you're going to have to learn stuff, you might as well enjoy it. The Dana Show.
And take an economy that is performing very well. We've had the fastest recovery from a downturn that we've ever seen, and the fastest recovery of any nation around the globe. The unemployment rate is near a 50-year low. The economy is doing well, and it would threaten all of that.
So we go from Baghdad Bob to Banking Bob. Good grief. Janet Yellen. Everything's fine, guys. No risk. You guys stop digging holes in your yard for your money. It's all right. Everything's great. Come bring it all to the banks. Everything's fine. That is I think it terrifies me more when the people in charge clearly are not paying attention to everything that we are seeing on purpose. You're just supposed to believe them and not your lying eyes. That makes me even more terrified. Welcome back to the program. Your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash here. You can listen coast to coast. You can live stream it. You can watch Channel 349 DirecTV. So I always like to go to the experts on this because I know what I know and I know what I don't know. And I also know that anytime there's any kind of instability in the financial sphere, I immediately am that person that wants to stuff her mattress, dig holes in her yard, get my tinfoil hat on, and like stand right there on the edge of the cliff of hysteria. That's me. So we need to bring someone in a little wiser on this issue and who is going to talk us all off the edge of that cliff or not. Maybe she'll help push us off it. We don't know. Carol Roth is a fantastic commentator. She's a recovering investment banker. I like how she says that. If you have not gotten her book, The War on Small Business, I don't know what. It's how the government used the pandemic to crush the backbone of America. So first and foremost, going off of your book title, I've read so many things on this, Carol. And again, thank you so much for joining us. I've read so many things on this where people say, well, it was a lot of the ease of regulations during the pandemic that helped create what we've seen with the banking crisis, et cetera. How accurate is that?
It's not accurate. I mean, certainly there was a rollback of some regulation, but the specific things that they did didn't really create this issue. And if you think about the author of this legislation, Dodd-Frank, Barney Frank, he was actually sitting on the board of one of the banks that ended up collapsing. So obviously, you know, the guy who knows exactly what regulation is important is the one who's overseeing the collapse. I mean, at the end of the day, the macro thread that connects all of this is Fed intervention at epic proportional scales. I mean, we have never seen the level of money printing that, you know, balloons up a balance sheet to $9 trillion, the artificial suppression of interest rates for the greater part of the last 15 years. The system could not handle that. And while each of the banks had a little different flavor of how they couldn't handle that, it was the same thing. You had the manipulation, the central planning in the market, creating a scenario that created too much money and too much risk taking that wasn't natural for what the market should have been able to handle. So if you really want to focus on the crux of the issue, we need to have regulation and roll back the Fed's powers, not worry about this other regulation, which all it does is it ends up consolidating power. If you think about after the Great Recession financial crisis, when Dodd-Frank did come out, you know, a number of community banks went away. There was less new small business formation and less small business lending because the big banks don't have the capacity to kind of deal with the smaller loans. So the big guys get bigger, the small guys get smaller, the same as it ever was, Dana.
And that doesn't make me feel any better at all. Okay. And our friend Carol Roth, you can follow her on Twitter, Carol J.S. Roth. Because, okay, so again, tinfoil hat, and please bear with me because this is why you're here. You're the expert on these issues. So I see this thing going in line with it. We need less federal involvement, not more federal involvement in, from the Fed, different from federal government. But I see this thing, and I know it's I'm probably completely just being hyperbolic about it. It says U.S. Fed to launch FedNow, instant payment service amid fears that it could end the CBDC interest. I don't want to participate in anything like that. I'm just immediately freaked out. Why now, tinfoil hat? Why now are they announcing this when all this other stuff is happening?
The timing does seem a little like, you know, kind of read the room, guys. And obviously, I'm very concerned about a CBDC, a central bank digital currency, which would further consolidate the control and power over our money with the Fed and the federal government as well. So that is a bad thing. The FedNow system, I'm kind of 50-50 on. So it is an enhanced payment system. So it kind of basically, not to get wonky, but it helps with the fast settlement of payments. So if you think about people who live paycheck to paycheck, they have to go and get a payday loan because they cannot access funds immediately. They don't have enough money in the bank. Now this allows for settlement 24/7, you know, kind of across the system, assuming that banks and financial institutions actually opt in and want to participate in it. But, you know, it does, theoretically, if it works, it ends up increasing the speed of settlement settlement. But certainly, it does, in my opinion, create more systemic risk, because what if there's fraud? You know, everything's a little bit more concentrated. But that was one of the big arguments for CBDC. Oh, this is an instant way to settle payments. This will make things fast, you know. So I think from my argument, I would say, well, you have FedNow in place. You don't need a CBDC. So the settlement side is a little bit different than the actual currency and control of the currency. Not to say that there aren't downsides, and not to say that you shouldn't be a little tinfoil hatty and a bit skeptical. But I think that the argument we all now need to make and go, great, you have a very quick payment system. You don't need a CBDC to make payments instantly. So therefore, you have no need for a digital dollar. You know, we lead the world. We have private choices. Now we have a system that supports it. We can just move on from that. But certainly, as we know, they're never going to let a good crisis go to waste. And you can't have a bank run if there are no banks.
That is true. Ah, no banks, no bank run. There you go. Works perfectly. Talking with our friend Carol Roth, who is the author of The War on Small Business, also New York Times bestselling author of The Entrepreneur Equation. So I want to switch gears. The ESG veto his first veto, Joe Biden's first veto to defend the rule on ESG investing, the environmental so stupid governance rule. That's we're just doing that. That works, right? What your thoughts on that? Because the way that they characterize this is though Republicans were trying to rob everyone of their 401k, rob everyone of all their savings. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, ESG is basically, if you want to think about it, it's business social credit. There is no kind of score standard that is standardized. It's whatever we think is an important thing as the elite that we want to push.
Totally arbitrary.
Yeah, we're going to force the corporations to do it. And we've already seen this in Europe and, you know, somewhat here as well, you know, based on, oh, we're having a natural gas crisis. Well, maybe that's, you know, ESG for now. And, oh, you know, war with Ukraine. Well, maybe weapons are now ESG investments. I mean, they keep changing the goalposts and moving the goalposts and changing the definition of ESG. At the end of the day, it's very important to have a fiduciary standard for investments. Businesses, you know, through a free market, do the things that ESG from a macro sense wants to do, right? If you're bad stewards of the environment, if you treat your employees horribly, if you do things that are, you don't have a diverse set of thoughts that kind of consider all of your customers and your true stakeholders, you're not going to do well as a business. Your customers aren't going to want to work with you. You're not going to be able to hire. So that's built into the system. But the idea that there needs to be, you know, this standard that's set by, you know, God knows who, the World Economic Forum, the UN, BlackRock, you know, a bunch of accountants that can extract fees here, it actually takes the focus away from focusing on delivering to customers and shareholders, and now creates this distraction. And we're seeing the effect of this distraction to some extent in all of the issues that businesses are facing, not just in the banking industry, but more widely. So that's the fundamental issue. You know, they're trying to get their political and social agenda installed and using your capital to do it. So it's not only taking away your freedom and choice, it's making the business that you invest in perform less well. And as you know, Dana, because you are endorsing, I have a new book coming out called You Will Own Nothing, coming out in July. And this is kind of the basis of one of those You Will Own Nothing things, that they push these things and take away your wealth creation opportunities so they can grab more wealth for themselves.
I think anybody who has a bank account needs to get your book, because it is insightful and simultaneously terrifying, because it's happening now, or in the beginning stages, some of this is happening now, and it's incredibly frightening. And we definitely, the week that it comes out, we definitely want to get you on and talk about that and make sure, I think everybody needs to get that book. Okay, this might be, again, hyperbole, you know, more of a hysterical question. Kane, I know, is thinking of it. Maybe. Are we in for a market crash?
So
I asked her like a big 30,000 foot, and she, sorry, but I wonder, cause I look at this and I just get, I have to admit, I have to seek out your Twitter account, cause you're so suppressed on Twitter, to see how you're reacting to some of these headlines, to see if I should freak out.
So here's what I have to say about the market is, obviously, we know the people who are connected to the financial markets are the ones that the elite want to save because they are them or their buddies and cronies. We saw that during COVID, that the very first actions were taken to prop up the market. So, you know, I don't necessarily see a huge thesis to put more money in the market today. I do think that we're going to end up with a perhaps deeper and broader recession, given some of the events that have happened here recently. And I do think that's going to end up having a long tail effect on the market. You never know when. But over longer periods of time, I think it's important to diversify, because in this kind of jockeying for position in a new financial world order, they are going to work to take care of themselves. So if you try to time the market and pull your money out now, but miss the next up cycle, that affects your overall return. So I do think diversification is important. And I also think your time period is important. If you're somebody who is retiring or has a need for that capital that's in the market now, you might want to talk to your financial advisor and maybe put it into a treasury security or something that is earning 4 or 5% over shorter durations, because your time period is different. But if you have a longer term time horizon, the financial world order shift is probably going to take some time to come about, as they always do. That after Bretton Woods, it took 15 years to put that into place. And, with them inflating, everything and your dollar being worth less and less, you have to keep up with that. But it is important to be diversified. It is important to have hard assets, including precious metals, including, land if you can, water rights, all of those kinds of things, and just not be in any one thing. So it's a really good time to give your financial advisor a call and say, maybe the traditional portfolio allocation doesn't make sense for me going forward, and I want to take a little bit more of a conservative approach, and then have that diversification, because we just don't know how this all goes down. And by the way, the prediction is based on what's happening today, but then some genius can make another idea, like, Biden could go, yeah, we're going to just turn off all, gasoline. And that completely changes the dynamic. So that makes we know that where the trajectory is going, but the actual timing and the steps along the way, that's what makes it so hard to predict. Right. And if I knew that, Dana, I'd be sitting on my yacht in the Mediterranean and not chatting with you here today.
And because we're friends with her, we would also be on our yachts,
exactly,
because she would be giving us tips about all this,
exactly,
stuff. So we call each other all from our yachts. Carol, always so good to have you. Go get her book, The War on Small Business, and You Will Own Nothing, her forthcoming latest book out soon. Carol Roth, always a pleasure. Thank you, my friend.
All right, great to chat with you. Bye.
Take care. We have more to come as we wrap up this third hour of our broadcast. I would totally have a yacht, and we just call each other from our yachts. That's how we do it, right?
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app, weekdays noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
And you can subscribe over at Substack to Chapter and Verse, the newsletter. And we'll make sure that any kind of developments, any kind of breaking news, I always cover over there as well. And check out the YouTube discussion that happens live every day, literally over at YouTube on the Dana Lash channel. So the latest, I'm looking at this. So apparently the indictments probably come down tomorrow, but the arraignment won't happen until next week. So, and probably both of those will fall on a Wednesday. You heard Andy McCarthy, and we're going to put that interview up on YouTube and Facebook as well, particularly the part where he was going in the timeline of what potentially to expect. And being that, he was, there, U.S. Attorney, Southern District's office, he knows exactly how this is going to go. I thought he laid out a pretty good timeline of what to expect, and, Bragg's machinations with all of this. So we'll have that up for you as well. All right. Today in stupidity.
Oh, it's our president, President Joe Biden. He is a student of the Persian culture. He's not a practitioner. He's just a student. Listen to this.
The Persian culture is amazing. As a student of the Persian culture, not a practitioner, but a student.
Student.
It's my favorite episode of the Days of Our United States. His practicing of a the Persian culture, whatever that.
One thing I know for sure, Biden is not a student of anything at this point. If he is, he's the worst.
He plagiarizes.
Student. You know, that's the worst student ever.
Yeah, I know. I'm so far tentatively, I'm scheduled to be on Fox tonight. I'll give you updates about that on Facebook, on Jesse Waters' program. In the meantime, have a wonderful evening. Find us on Facebook, YouTube, like, and subscribe. I'll be back behind the mic with you tomorrow. Hump day.